the devotion for God, that is our true nature, is a rare thing in this world where people naturally get attracted by the different forms, different appearances, and therefore they miss the true source of all love, all attraction, all devotion. It is the Lord within all of us that is really attracting everyone, but we forget this, and thus we move around, go everywhere in search of happiness, in search of love, in search of different sources of satisfaction. And every time we get a blow because we are aspiring for something that really isn't there. So, therefore, it is said that the people coming to God happens in four different ways. Not all, first of all, come, but those who come, very fortunate people, very good people, they also have grace. They were discussed earlier that there are four types, broad categories, those who are afflicted in this world. There are so much afflictions and sufferings, and therefore to get over them, they come to God. They try all other things and then feel that this headache can go maybe by approaching God. It is probably their idea that if they approach God, the headache will go away. Then there are those inquisitive people. They want to just know what is this God business. So many people seem to go to churches and read scriptures. So what is this God about? So they are inquisitive, so go to religion for that. Then there are those who want prosperity and wealth and such things. So they go for that. There is such a variety. But the one who knows God to be the essential reality or the source of the whole universe, they do not go to God for something. They go to God for God. It is, there is no further achievement. It is according to our understanding of what is the ultimate achievement in life, we make our efforts to get there. Like for some, the ultimate achievement in life is getting maximum power. Power is what is desirable. So, like that George Orwell's very famous novel, 1984, it discusses this idea that everything is for power. The one powerful big boss that and is ruling the entire universe, everything in the world. But then to rule, there are those contradictions are shown there, that to rule you have to have subjects. Now they will have different things. There will be always conflicts and wars, so that the person can get the satisfaction of ruling. So that is all shown there. And then the question came that what is ultimately the purpose for all this. And in a big philosophical passage, it is said that it is the power. Power is not for something. Power is for power. Power is the goal. For some, the sex is the goal, that, well, ultimately everything boils down to that. So there are many so-called scholars who think that that is what human life is made of, and that is the whole universe, they see only that. And therefore, that which satisfies those cravings, and that, according to them, is the source of all struggles in life. Everything is for that. Then, there are others who feel that, well, these are temporary something. You have to go beyond this. There is a source that transcends both these urges and yet includes them as the special manifestations. So, that is the self-expression, the realizing one's own true self. So, that is the concern of some. They go to God as the God himself is. We want God for the sake of God. We don't want anything else from God. We want God because God is the only reality. But it takes time for people to understand His truth, and therefore one progresses gradually for that. There are other things that one feels more important, that even though they intellectually understand that we all must be seeking God, but first comes first. So what is first for them? First, let me get over this PhD. Let me get my PhD first. Then comes God realization. Or let me get over this something right now. Then I will think of God. Let me first. I meet many such, you know, people with all these are very practical things. And we all get that, well, God realization may be the ultimate goal, but first let me take care of my cat, and then the dog will come later. First my dog, then my God. So it is we have, many people have that idea that first the intermediate things are there, God will come later. So they have to now go through all this process and realize that those all other things that they craved for were not real. They were just coming and going, passing. But it takes the efforts, and that evolution happens in gradation. One has to acquire that evolution through a strenuous, well-directed, scientifically done efforts. And therefore it may take long time to acquire virtues. It requires time and effort. Everything, the reality is beyond time and space. But any process means time. So when we bring about a change in our habits, in our thinking, in our prerogatives and all, we find it, you know, that there is the gradation, the time is there. That what are the preferences that we set forth, that change according to time, according to the efforts that are put in. And then we, like, you go in a school it takes time to say go from 1 year from grade 1 to grade 2, another year from grade 2 to grade 3 and so forth. So acquisition of virtues that ultimately become very important in this understanding that God alone is real. Without the acquisition of virtues, this truth doesn't sink in our being. Therefore, in a very beautiful primer on Vedanta, that Vedanta Sar, this idea is found in many other Vedanta texts, but in a concise form it is given there, that who is the competent student of Vedanta who can understand these truths? It is then a list is given there that one should acquire the habit of seeing what is real or what is permanent and what is impermanent. Study whenever things come before our awareness, then we should develop this habit of judging from this point of view. We normally judge it from whether it is pleasant or not pleasant. But instead, we should acquire this habit of judging whether they are permanent or they are impermanent. And after seeing that those which are impermanent, our attraction and attachment for them is going to be cause of suffering, the mind should reject that which is impermanent. And that is what we find in the great examples of various sages, that they saw this, like Sri Ramakrishna. He looks at the world and says in his biography by Swami Saradananda, as well as in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, one reads these things that he says, I saw from the childhood, I saw that this everything that is born dies. Everything that has name and form degenerates and vanishes. It is all changing and therefore not real. And when you know that something is not real, the mind does not go towards it. It is only when we know that it is real, the mind goes there. You can see that. If something is not real, the mind doesn't go there. When you know something is real, the mind then will go. Otherwise, it will not go. It is unreal, well, that's it. You will not get attached to it. So, this habit is to be cultivated. That penetrating through the appearance and seeing the substance, what is real there. And then one should refrain the actions that tend to make us attached, because it is the actions and the thoughts or the awareness, they correspond with each other. And therefore, our actions also have to be trained to follow this wisdom. If it is compartmentalized, as is done in many cases, that the intellectual life goes in one direction, the emotional life in another direction, and usually the actions, they follow these emotions. So, therefore, all this needs to be trained properly. And it may take long time to train. It doesn't matter whether long time or short time, one has to begin that process. And therefore, Lord says in the 19th verse of this 7th chapter, Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudevah sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabhah. At the end of innumerable births, the man of realization takes refuge in me, and knowing that all this is Vasudeva, such a saint is exceedingly rare. The Bahunam, it has been translated here as infinitely many. Infinitely many is not what is exactly meant. Infinitely many, only in the sense you cannot say that 7 births or 9 births, whatever it takes. It is like how long does it take to clean the hallway? Suppose you are to do the cleaning. This hallway is to be cleaned. Now you cannot say that it takes 5 minutes or 15 minutes or 2 hours. Depends on how fast you work, how dirty it is, and so forth. So all those factors will determine the time that it will take. So similarly, this acquisition of virtues, Shankara in his commentary here mentions that for acquisition of the disciplines and virtues, it takes time. And how much time you cannot stipulate, but one has to start the work, and whenever it is finished, fine. But how long will it take to finish cannot be told in terms of so many hours or so many days, so many years, or even so many lifetimes. As long as it takes. It is like one person, when I ask, when are you likely to come, says that I will be there when I get there. So it is cannot put a time, you know, that when will you come? Well, I will be there when I will be there, because there are many uncertainties, so cannot tell exactly what time. So many factors play the role. So how long will it take to acquire all the virtues? Don't waste time in this question. That is, start working. That will at least reduce the time. It is, start working in that direction, and we will get there one day for sure. So, and with that acquisition of those virtues, what happens? That then you realize your true nature as divine. You are divine. The world is not then seen as something separate from you. The line of separation just disappears. The whole existence now is I, or Brahman, or God. There is no idea of I and you anymore. So, that is the knowledge. Jnanavan means the one who gets this supreme knowledge. One, through the acquisition of virtues, becomes a person of knowledge, not merely by reading the books. It is a very important thing that we all need to note. Triveni, is it not? That not only reading lots of books. Some have that feeling that I have read all the Upanishads, I have read the Bible, I have read Quran, I have read all the literature in Buddhism and Taoism and postmodern religions and whatever, you know, it may mean. It is that, okay, you have read all that literature. Does it mean that you get the knowledge of Brahman? No. It is dependent not on how many books you have read, but how much virtue has been practiced in life, how much this transition or transformation has taken place in life. Can you tell, for example, if I keep on looking at the map of Africa for 1 month, will I get to Africa? If I look at 50 maps of it, will that make me get to Africa? No, it is not dependent on how many maps I look. It is how much travel I practically undertake. That will determine it. So therefore, all this reading the books or even writing a big thesis, it is important, especially in these School of Divinities. All universities have that Schools of Divinity. And then what one has to do, you have to get your PhD or something, you have to write a thesis. So, and you have to write something that has not been explored before. Otherwise, you don't get PhD. So, you have to dig out something new and throw new light on scriptures. Old light will not do. All those sages, whatever they did, all that was old light. That may bring you illumination, but not a PhD. Problem is there. But it is. So, what happens by that, one becomes a big scholar. And but that doesn't mean that person comes anywhere closer to truth by that. The acquisition of this knowledge depends primarily on the cultivation of virtues. In the 13th chapter, this idea will come up again, where the knowledge of the two types, means the knowledge of the seen and the knowledge of the seer, knowledge of the objects and the knowledge of the subject, has been discussed. In a few lines, Lord has described what is this knowledge of the objective world. That all that can be touched, all that can be seen, all that can be thought about, all that is knowledge of the object. Okay, understood. All that can be thought, all that can be sensed, all that can be seen, touched, and so forth. So, all that is knowledge of the objects. What is the knowledge of the subject? It is very interesting that Lord there does not tell that this is the knowledge of the subject. Because then this is means it is again an object, you know. How it can't be the knowledge of the subject. And so, the whole discussion there changes the track. The description of virtues begin. That you have to become egoless, you have to become more compassionate, you have to reduce the cravings for the sensory enjoyments, and all that. So many virtues have been listed there. And after listing them, Lord says a very beautiful line. He says that etajnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadatonyatha. These virtues are called knowledge, and whatever is not that is ignorance. One may be very well university educated. One may have many degrees and might be, you know, very highly respected in academic field. But that doesn't at all mean knowledge. What is meant by knowledge is acquisition of these virtues. If not, ajnanam, ignorance. That is, you have been just looking at maps, you haven't gone to Africa. It is so different, you know, the whole thing has to shift the locus. Our whole efforts have to be on different line. That is what is meant here, that Shankara there in the commentary says, why all these virtues are called knowledge? Jnana sadhanatvat jnanam iti proktam. That because these are the valid means of knowledge, these are called knowledge themselves. So, that takes practice. A lot of practice has to be put in with great discipline. It is not easy, you know, we have given ourselves to the whimsical or acting according to our liking. This moment I feel like doing this, next moment I feel like doing that. It is not conducive to acquisition of knowledge. It has to do with putting life in discipline. This disciplining is so important that you then proceed on the track. Like whatever, you know, a journey means a discipline. You do not then go here, there. You go, you try to remain on the track. Like you to board a flight, for example. That is a discipline. You have to buy a ticket. You have to go all through all that these days, very tedious, that securities and all that, checking. So you get there, discipline. Then board the flight, again discipline. You cannot say in the mid-air, no, I don't want to go there, I want to just go elsewhere. Well, you cannot now, in the mid-air, you cannot jump out of it. So, it is a discipline that, like that, and that requires resolves. We make very strong resolves for certain most useless things. But when it comes to, you know, practicing spiritual disciplines, one says, this morning I was having a discussion with one nice gentleman, and he said, well, the mind doesn't become quiet. What is the use of meditation? What is the use of meditation? The mind doesn't remain quiet. So many thoughts keep on coming. Said, that is why meditation is required. You know? My teacher had told this nice thing about it. He said that people ask this question that how can I meditate, the mind keeps on getting so ruffled all the time. He compared it to the question that why should I take medicine, I am sick. Do you say that, well, because you are sick you should be taking medicine. The mind is ruffled and therefore the medicine for that is not medication but meditation. It is, meditation is the medicine for that, for bringing that calmness, that poise, that concentration to our minds. That is a virtue to be acquired, and one has to put oneself with great resolve into those disciplines. And that takes time. Criticizing others is very easy, comes very easily. That person doesn't do meditation, very regular in habits. But criticizing doesn't help. You know, actually progressing in life even an inch, those who know how difficult it is, they won't criticize others. They may, depending on the situation, may admonish. But it is a difficult thing. that to make even an inch of actual progress is not easy. One has to put in proper, well-directed scientific efforts to do that. Otherwise, just whimsical actions in the name of spiritual practice, that doesn't bear much result. So, one of the virtues that is told there is following the precepts given by the teacher and also do various types of service activities to discipline oneself. It is, you have to take up, I had heard this word long back and I didn't get the meaning of that at that time. It was just early, very early years of my monastic life. And I said, well, I don't like to like those works. Then somebody told me whether you like or not is not the question. My superior there told, you have to do it on principle. That your likes and dislikes don't count there. You have been told to do it and do it. That is a practice to control yourself, to get over the likes and dislikes. And believe me, friends, it is not easy. At least for me, it was not very easy. So, what I mean to say is that it takes time to mold oneself. But what does that mean is that we should start right away without wasting any time. Isn't it, Charles? We should start right away. Don't waste time. Don't brood even about, oh, how much time I wasted before. Oh, you don't waste more time in counting how much time you wasted. It is, just start now. Time is precious. And whenever it is finished, whenever it is done, it is done. And then, Bahunam Janmanam Ante, after maybe many births, maybe in this birth itself, maybe tomorrow itself, maybe while this class is going on right now itself, depends on how fast we go and how much distance we have to cover. It can happen this moment also. Like that Holy Mother's disciples once asked, how long will it take me to realize God? And she asked that if you can make your mind desireless now, then now. Can you make your mind desireless now? Then it is now. How long? Well, when you become desireless, then. That means you have realized the truth. That is, and what happens then? You see the Lord. Means what? Next line says that Vasudeva Sarvamiti. God alone is everything. The Self alone is everything. The same Self pervades, penetrates in and through all these appearances. That becomes the actual awareness of a person. Like Sri Ramakrishna used to say about his awareness. Oh, great words, that I see all different forms as the covers of pillows. The same cotton is filled in all pillows. The covers are different. Some are like you have some round here, some rectangular there, and so forth. You know? But same material gets filled into them. Inside they are same. So he says all the forms are seen like the these pillow cases. the inside the same substance. He is seeing it actually. And not when he is in samadhi. He is talking about his waking state in the sense that he is dealing with the world. The world that we are seeing, he is seeing too, but not as we see. The differentiation is transcended there and is seeing, feeling the same oneness. It doesn't make any change in the awareness because of the changes in the shapes. So that is the ultimate goal of us. It is ultimate because there is nothing more to achieve after that. There is nothing after that, in fact. And so he says, Lord says here, it takes time to get to that awareness. And why it takes time, he says, that our life is constrained with so many desires, countless and continuously branching out desires. That it says in the next 28 verses, kamaistaitahi rita jnanaha prapadyante nyadevataha tam tam niyamamasthaya prakritya niyata svaya. Deprived of discrimination by particular desires, they worship other deities, observing particular rites, being swayed by their own nature. This is what happens, that my desire, every desire, obscures the knowledge of the reality. The reality is there is no I and world. And what does desire mean? I, and I need that. So the truth gets obscured by the desire. Whatever may be the desire, it covers the truth. So now we can imagine, you know, always so many desires bubbling one after another. One gives rise to another one, as if it is never ending, that fountain of desires. And so it covers the knowledge of the truth. And thus people are propelled by these desires to worship other deities. Now what is this other deity? Like if you feel that that desire for wife or desire for husband, then what gives you wife or husband, that becomes your God automatically. You start worshipping that. Maybe a marriage bureau becomes the God. If you feel that, well, the desire for eating sweets, then a confectionery becomes your God. A worship place where they distribute lot of sweets. So then you go there not for God. We used to go as kids, you know, to the different temples, not for really the God or such thing. We would go in quick rush, do a salute, because the priest won't give us sweets unless you salute. So then quickly you see, do the salute and then stand in the line to get the sweets. So and sometimes would stand twice, you know, that after taking once, finish it and stand in the line again. And the priest would notice sometimes, but would, if it is available, he would give again. One priest, I remember, asked a very nice question to me. That day probably the supply was less, so I took once and then stood again in the line. And then, you know, for such, there is no crime in love, you know that. So, therefore, this I was in love with the sweet. So, you can tell lies there. He knew the psychology. So, he asked me when I stretched my hand, hey, are you coming third time? He said, then I confess no, only twice, second time. Get out! Why you are coming twice? So the desire for sweet makes the source of sweet as God. And desire for sexual pleasure makes whatever gives that pleasure as God. And desire for wealth, well, whatever gives wealth becomes my God. So we worship different gods because our knowledge of the truth is robbed by all these desires. Every desire robs the knowledge. And so with so many desires, how much knowledge might be left with us, who knows. You go to different places quite naturally. You know. It is not condemned, one need not condemn these things because these are natural propensities seeking the pleasures of the senses. And so one goes for those things. Now, when you go for it, you get it too, if you have applied the proper God, you have taken recourse to the proper God, and that, well, I want this pleasure, and it is available there. I go to that there, and I get it. The cause and effect relationship plays there. So this is kind of worship. Whether even the atheists, they do this worship. Worship means what? You are pulled to some place and perform some rituals, and then you get the result of that. Like want some sweets, and now you don't see the church will be giving it. So, you go to a restaurant, say Dunkin' Donut, and get a donut. But you don't get it as it is. You have to perform some ritual. That is, you have to pay the cash, you know. Or it is that only they say that God doesn't have to pay. That we trust God. It is said, we trust God. All others pay cash. It is. America trusts in God. All others have to pay cash. So, this is, you have to go through that ritual. If you don't go through that ritual, you don't get it. So, that is a ritual, worship and ritual. For every kind of pleasure you approach a God that brings that pleasure to you. Then also you approach the God, not these forms, but some other Godhead, so that the path to these pleasures be smooth. But the idea is to get those pleasures, those desires fulfilled. And then if you apply the proper means, then you get them. So, Lord says that this is tam tam niyamam asthaya, that they have trust in those laws, that if you see a sign that's a confectionery, then you know that you get sweets there. So if you see the sign grocery store, then you know that grocery, you get grocery there. These are the rules, and if you obey those rules, you get the results according to those established rules. So, nothing wrong in that. But he says, mayaiva vihitan hitan, that this has all been arranged by Lord, this cause-effect relationship. There was a very nice discussion in North Carolina. I had gone there recently, and a question came up that why do we need God when we get all everything, you know, by this cause-effect relation is there, that if you do this, you get this result. The answer to that is, who arranged this relationship? Who arranged this relationship that if you eat sugar, you will get the sense of sweetness? How the relations were formed? It is cause-effect relationship is like the lock and key. That you fit the key in this lock, it opens. If you want to open another lock, you have to use another key, the key that fits in that lock. So, who is the locksmith who has arranged this key and lock relation? This is something that generally people don't pay thought to it. That, well, this is a law. But how this law was made? Who got this law into function? Who connected this cause and effect? This is very important. The connection between the cause and effect, that is, this we don't look at the source of it. What connects the cause and effect? Why a particular cause gives rise to a particular effect? This is something that one has to give a lot of thought to. And we will see that there is really no source for it. Why does it not happen in a different way? You don't know. And not that it never happens. It may happen. And therefore you have to keep changing these laws. Science, history of science tells how many times the laws get changed. That what was considered to be the law some centuries back is no longer considered to be the law, because the evidence was found where it doesn't get obeyed. Thus, the cause-effect relationship, who makes this? It is, we feel that, well, law of causation, as soon as the word law is used, in our mind it appears as if sacrosanct. No, that is, the law means it cannot be broken. But it is not the case. Not only the government laws, even the so-called laws of nature as we understand them get broken, because nature is too vast. Compared to our brain, we don't understand every working. So, like the laws of the weather forecast, they forecast and it comes true many times. Sometimes, therefore, people make a joke about it, that the weather forecasters is the only business, you know, where only job where you get paid for making 99% mistakes. It is, you make 99% mistakes and yet you get paid for it. It is because the mistakes are expected there. That it is, why so? Because of the hundreds and hundreds of parameters which may influence weather, you know only a few. And on the basis of that calculation, on that, you derive some conclusions and predict that if something of that, something that you have no understanding of, plays a role, it goes just haywire. So therefore it is important that law is, who makes that law? Lord says, that is, I make that arrangement. It is through my arrangement this law also comes into existence. It is a very interesting idea, friends, that law doesn't have any status of its own, that law is secondary something. Law stands on the basis of truth, which is beyond law. The truth cannot be caught in a law. The law requires truth. Truth does not require law. So that is a great idea that is stated here, mayaiva vihitan hitan, that it is I who have ordained those like that. And by following it in the right manner, in a methodical way, one gradually learns to transcend them and come to God. One sees that you aspired for sexual pleasure and you got it. And what did you get by that? You got lot of suffering, terrible bondage, so many things that you didn't expect to come by that. But therefore now you have learned your lesson. I will not go for that. I will not ask for that. And all the misery is a great teacher. No? When you do something right and get the right result, you learn, but not that much. But when you get a blow, then that makes us think, introspect, why did I get that blow? And then one learns from that. So therefore, that will be spoken of in the next verse, which we shall discuss by the grace of Lord next Friday. It is after Thanksgiving Friday. But still, I think no problem in holding the class. The class will go on as usual by the grace of God, and then we will try to discuss that. Any questions today? Yes, Charles?
Two questions,
okay.
Okay, the first one is, you said that if you have sensual pleasures, you automatically get the suffering as a reaction. But then you say God creates the law, so could God change that law so you could have all sensual pleasure with no pain? That doesn't seem to me to be possible.
Well, that is not possible. And could God change that law? It is, yes, God can change the law. But that doesn't mean that you will get only pleasure, because the very nature of pleasure is pain.
So isn't that a law that's just an automatic law?
It is the not law, it is a tautology. Law is different from tautology, you know. Tautology means the same thing is told in other words. It is not that the obverse of the coin will have reverse. Coin means two sides, you see. The very word coin, it is not that it is not law. Tautology is not a law. It is the two expressions of the same thing. That doesn't make it law. It is therefore no question of changing that. Very good, okay. And next question.
Well, once you gave a definition of what makes something a morality or a virtue, and I can't remember what you said, can you say that again?
Oh, well, yes, virtue is something that takes you closer to your true self, makes your desires less object oriented. So that is the nature of virtue. All that we call morality and virtue centers on that. Like it is moral to be unselfish, immoral to be selfish. It is It is moral to be compassionate. It is immoral to hurt. So, if you analyze what it means is, the feeling the same self in others is virtue, and feeling the distinction is not a virtue. Okay, Sheila first, and then Roshni. That is again a tautology, you know. That is not a desire, but looks like it is desire. There is no better word for that. Therefore, it is not a desire, really. You develop that desire very strongly. That desire to be desireless. Great. Yes, Roshni? Well, it is a question that is very often asked about what is wrongly called as real world. They in Maya, in ignorance, the words also completely change. What is unreal gets called real world. So, yes, in that unreal world, of course, you will be criticized. Where will you be preferred to be criticized? In unreal world or in the real world? There is no striking balance between unreal and real. You have to learn to bring more virtue in life and eliminate vice. And there is nothing that you lose by that. If you lose a lot of fake notes, if you lose all the counterfeits, what do you lose? You don't lose anything. So similarly, you don't lose anything by getting the knowledge. Never have this thought that you will lose then seeing the football match. No, no, you will not lose it. You know? You will not have to depend on that for your pleasure, that's all. You will not lose any such thing. You will gain everything. Very good. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarayi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko mantrah tasya namani yani karmapyekam tasya devasya seva Shri Krishna arpanam